Okay, so we had started to talk about the question of how to interpret the Tosfos. And the Tosfos says that we have a difference in Pshara and in Din. That Pshara, yes, it's connected to Din, but there is a major difference. That Pshara, we're not going to follow Rov, you're going to have three unanimous Dayanim. And Din specifically is where we apply the concept of Rov. So we went through three attempted Hezberim. The first Hezber, we rejected outright, but it's a very important discussion because it establishes the whole concept of what a Pshara is. That a Pshara is not simply a decision of Beis Din to split things down the middle, but it is a psak of within the Shuras HaDin. And that's a theme that's going to become the background here. The second Mahalach, which Soloveitchik also didn't like, but it was a Mahalach that many of us in the room had suggested, and Rav Moshe Sternbuch had a tshuva along these lines, that the issue is, it really is up to the Balei Din. That the Balei Din, we're assuming that when they come to this panel of Hashranim, this panel of a Beis Din that's making a Pshara, so okay, we'll accept a psak that's not pure letter of the law, but if you're going to sell that to us, you got to really sell it. You got to really be behind it. So if the three of you are unanimous, fine. But otherwise, not going to take it. So that was one possibility. Rav Sternbuch thought that it makes a difference whether the formulation was Pshara or Pshara Krov LeDin. And Rav Soloveitchik didn't think that that was really the correct pshat and thought that Din Rov would be separate from this. But if one does accept this pshat as opposed to another interpretation, so there might be a practical nafkamina. Now, what practical nafkamina could you think of? If we say it's because the Balei Din presumably don't want to accept the Rov or insisting on unanimity, so what nafkamina would this have? Think about it for a second.
They decide to.
What if they decide to? Hey, what if they are masne? What if the two people come and say that we'll be happy with Rove. So if the whole premise here is that we're afraid they're not agreeing without unanimity, maybe if they agree to Rove, maybe it should work. So Rav Eger, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch in Chodesh HaMishpat, Rav Eger quotes from Ma'ariv Kash that indeed would work. That you could have a t'nai on the path of the parties that they would accept Rove, and that would be effective for Pshara. And the Sefer Orchos Mishpatim, he quotes from earlier sources that he thinks that that's actually the implication if you ever have a Zabla. There's a Zabla, and I hope we'll have time over the course of the year. Luckily, we also have June when everybody will totally be here. But so if we don't get to it now, we'll get to it maybe in June, and that'll be just as effective because, again, everyone, even more people will be here then. So, in the context of Zabla, if you have a Beis Din that is selected specifically by the parties, and the Zabla involves one Dayan being selected by one side, one Dayan being selected by the other side, and a third Dayan being jointly selected, so some understand that that implies already that within such a system you're going to accept Rove. Now, presumably, you're not expecting unanimity in that context, and the very nature of such an arrangement is that Rove will have to be sufficient. Now, that's an interesting statement, because that's going to require an understanding of what Zabla is. You know, Zabla, again, hopefully we'll get to it. So what exactly are the expectations when each side appoints a Dayan? So is there some expectation that somehow the Dayan
is going to represent the side that selected him, that's
a whole separate discussion. But it's consistent with the idea that if you have a Zavla, then maybe all the more so you can't expect unanimity, and that maybe that's implicit then that when you have a Zavla for Pshara, so then Rove would be accepted. David?
Usually Zavla is for Din, not for Pshara.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily at all. Because you could say, you could easily say that, especially nowadays, let's say you don't have a standing Bezdin. Right, so you could say, all right, we need to have a resolution here. So we're going to put together a panel, and we'll tell this panel that we're okay with a pshara approach. No reason why that can't happen. So if that's the case, I mean, I hear where you're coming from, but and maybe you're also latching on to the part that's assuming that the dayanim are going to be adversarial to each other, which is a whole discussion we'll have to have as far as what are the assumptions within the Zabla arrangement. But you see that this position that the Orchus Peshpatim is quoting is assuming that that's the case, that there's some kind of a adversarial nature within the Dayanim. And therefore, if you're saying this is a system we're going into, then it must be with the understanding that there's not going to be a unanimous vote. So you put these two together, Shara and Zabla, it must be that we're going to be accepting of Rove. So Ben Chesitzchok, more recently, Ben Chesitzchok, Dain Weiss, if you're familiar with Ben Chesitzchok, he was a rabbi in Manchester, England, before coming to Yerushalayim, passed away a few decades ago already, but he was a very prominent posek of the last generation. So the Chulas Ben Chesitzchok writes that he disagrees with that premise, that Zabla is automatically a acceptance of Rove, but he does agree that Rove could be accepted. That you could have an explicit Tanai for Rove, even if he doesn't agree with the previous premise that Zavla is automatically there. So if that's your whole issue, if your whole issue with Rove is that the parties probably don't want it, so then this could be an approach. But the Rav wouldn't accept that approach because the Rav believes it's something more fundamental, that the Chiddush of Rove simply is not applicable here. And we mentioned his explanation yesterday that you could say that Rove is applicable only when you have an abstract din. That normally when you go into a Beis Din, so the Beis Din is going to do two things. The Beis Din is going to establish the halacha in the abstract and apply it to these parties. So the halacha in the abstract that will be having an impact in Doros, so there we have a chiddush of Rove. But if it's not like that, if we're not dealing with an abstract halacha, but we're dealing specifically with how it's adapted to this scenario, so then Rove, that whole chiddush, never comes into play. So that, also we mentioned yesterday, I explained this again if you want, but I mentioned yesterday how this could also reflect a difference between the din and the Flimishur Siddur. Right? Our whole question of why is it that we say that there's an ideal of a Flimishur Siddur at the same time as there is this din default. So maybe din is abstract, and the Flimishur Siddur means tailored to these circumstances. So din is what is going to have a precedent for future generations, while the Flimishur Siddur, by its very nature, won't, and therefore the whole concept of establishing halacha through the Rove is not going to come into play. Morty, you had a hand up?
Yes. That might have answered the question, but why is Bashar specific? Why is Bashar just applying it specifically to this case? Why so, is that any more true?
So let's flesh this out a little bit more then, to this last point that we just said just now. And so, in general, maybe this is a good opportunity to make this point clearer. What we're seeing here is that if you have a din without pshara, so a din might be, okay, so Morty was mazik Sammy's computer, so what's the din? You mazik somebody's stuff, what happens? So he drew that whole thing on it, and Morty says, but it makes it look better, and Sammy says, no, it wasn't supposed to be there, whole story. So the have a whole thing about that. We'll just look, open up a Shulchan Aruch, we'll see what's the din of mazik somebody's property. But the Lefnim B'Shuras HaDin might be, well, yes, he was mazik it, but he was trying to help, and also he's poor, and the computer is very expensive, and we're considering all these other factors. So all these other factors are not going to contribute to establishing halacha in future editions of the Shulchan Aruch, right? Because they're not about the din of mazik somebody's property. They're about the din of Morty being mazik Sandy's property yesterday. So those details are not details which are going to become established as halachic principles.
When you're doing, but in the first case, you're not establishing halachic.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to establish it. Well, maybe you have to use them, or maybe you have, if they were really, it depends what kind of principle. Some things are open to machlokas, right? So let's say it could be a machlokas, adam hamazik, ba'onis gomer, right? So you were sleepwalking and you drew that whole picture and you had no control over it, right? So adam hamazik, ba'onis gomer is a machlokas rishon, right? So you could say that we have to decide who is right in that machlokas rishon. So if it's a matter of non-disputed points, and now that we've seen the whole sugya of Shikol Hadas, so we see that what's considered to be up for debate is probably relatively narrow. But if it's a matter of non-disputed Sakim Shulchan Aruch, and everybody after that agrees, so then you're not going to have a split vote, right? You'll have 3-0, because the Dayanim are all going to agree that that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So why would you ever have a split vote? So you'll have a split vote because there's some nekuda of halacha that isn't established. So then the rov will establish it. But that's when we're talking about din. When we're talking about pshara, pshara is going to take into account factors that are not necessarily part of the din l'doros, that are not going to be recorded in our future Shulchan Aruch, but are only about this scenario as it happened on this day, in this context, with this person and that person, and therefore, that's what's different. Yes.
What's special about Rov that it could establish a din? Why are you
so the whole halacha of Rov, the whole idea of Achri Rav and Mahatos, so how do we know that we always follow Rov? Well, what's the context of Rov? So maybe we follow Rov to establish halacha, that we have a process, and we talked a little bit about last semester, right? That we have the process of halacha lo b'shamayim, as you know, the Gemara of Mitzvah tells us that there are certain points of halacha that are left open for human development, human assessment, and how does that happen? So it's clear from many Gemaras that that's where the pasuk of Achri Rav and Mahatos comes in. That the rov, the process of what the majority of those who were involved at that time, that's going to be Machriya. That's what we find in the Sanhedrin HaGadol. That's what we find in that famous story about the Tanur Shalachnai. That all of these cases in Dinim establish that halacha, even in the permanent sense, is established based on the rov. So too. So it's a chiddush in terms of being Machriya what the halacha should be. So said the Rav, yes, when you have halacha in the abstract, there's such a concept of Rav. But when you have a specifically tailored assessment to this situation, Rav doesn't make sense. And that's especially helpful for us to understand that maybe that's what the Mishra Siddin means. Because here's a synergy just in terms of the words helping us to understand each other back and forth. That if we say that Shara means a psak shel lefnim b'shuras hadin, so then maybe this helps us to understand also what lefnim b'shuras hadin means. Right, and this is one of the suggestions that we mentioned in terms of what is lefnim b'shuras hadin. I'll give you an example which is not based on a halachic principle, but it just helps to illustrate a little bit what we might mean. So, Shaul Yaakov. We got married last Sunday. And then it was recorded by the Wall Street Journal. Okay, we don't know that. But in the place where you got married, so there's a sign on the wall that says, anything after 30 days is hefker. Right? So even with Simon, it says no sense, it's very long, just a sign. Sorry, right. So That's not actually a halachic principle, but there's a svara to it. Okay, so let's say it's a good policy to use because it illustrates this point. Okay, so it's helpful to illustrate because Hashav Saveda is an area where you have a lot of Lefnim Meshuras Hadin. But if you learn Hilchos Hashav Saveda, if you learn the second parak of Bava Metzia, so we have a lot of dinim where you'd be surprised in the cases where you're actually not mechuyav to return lost property. And yet, in most of those cases, the Gemara says, and the Rishonim say, and in the Kamos of Hanarach Paskin, that Lefnim Meshuras Hadin, you should return it. So it's a good illustration of where you have this difference. So just to make up an example, let's say you had a policy like that in Shaul Yaakov's temporary home last week, that after 30 days, we declare lost property ours. Right? So what is that? That's a logical kind of policy, because you say, listen, we have to draw the line somewhere. On the one hand, we want to return lost property to people who forgot about it, who left it here, who dropped something. We want to be nice, and we want to give back people the stuff that they lost, right? On the other hand, we can't hold on to it forever. That's not fair to us. And if you're going to abandon it here, then we should be able to use it, and we shouldn't have any responsibility to protect it or to get it back to you. So I will draw a line, right? 30 days sounds fair. Right? It's a reasonable policy. Makes sense? Right? So you come before 30 days, you get your stuff back. You come after 30 days, you don't get your stuff back. Okay? Again, separate from any halachic principles, it sounds like a reasonable policy. Right? You can see why somebody would have such a rule. So let's say somebody comes after 30 days and 1 minute, and they're an elderly person who was kidnapped for 29 and a half days and then ran uphill both ways in the snow to get their family heirloom, which is the only thing they have, which they passed down from generations from their great-great-great-great-grandparents, and this is their only cherished property, and they left it here 31 days ago, and they were kidnapped for 29 of those days, and they did unbelievable efforts to try to come back, and now they finally got here, and it's 30 days and 1 minute. And you're a gazillionaire, and this is the only asset they have. So, based on the policy, they lose, right? It's 30 days. But would you think it's right not to give them back their item? Probably not. Right? So we would all probably say that in that case, if this was the only case that we ever had, we would have made the rule 31 days. We would have said, exception for this person. Right? It's that the policy had to be formulated in the abstract. You have to have rules. So we talk about in the abstract, it makes sense. Yeah, 30 days, that's a good, reasonable period of time where people who care enough can get back the item that they forgot, and people who let it go beyond that have declared they don't care so much. So in the abstract, the policy makes sense. But practically right here, and this, if this was the only case you ever had to deal with, you'd all say, come on, give it to the person who lost it. So that, I think, illustrates, and it's especially helpful because, again, Hashem HaSaveda is where you see this a lot, that Lefnim Meshuras Hadin means, one possible explanation of Lefnim Meshuras Hadin means that when you have the abstract name, it comes out one way. But when you have the specific circumstances, you see that Yosher is going to push you in a different direction. V'asisa ha-yosher v'hatov. Right, the Torah's mandate to be straight and to be fair here is going to say, come on, give it to me. So if that's a policy for Lefnim Meshuras Hadin, so that could be a policy here as well, that Pshara means that you recognize these things. That letter of the law, you'll say, okay, you lost it, you found it, that's the whole story. But Lefnim Meshuras Hadin, you take into account all these other facts. So that's where the Rav is saying that this is not something which lends itself to Rav. And that, he thinks, is the primary explanation. That's the primary interpretation of why it is that Rav doesn't work for Pshar. Just to fill this idea in a little bit more, to focus for another moment on the Lefnim Meshuras Hadin. So basically, what we've seen is two or three theories as to why the thin Besharas Hadin exists. Right? Either because it's an ideal that we can't expect of everyone, so we have to make it the thin Besharas Hadin, or we just mentioned now that it's what more accurately realizes the goal of the mitzvah, let's say of Hashabbos Aveda in this case. Or a third possibility is that it's the halacha that's motivated by other dinim or other Torah values, like Rachmanis and Staka. So it could be that as far as, let's say, if you want to change the scenario a little bit, let's say the Hashabbos Aveda scenario was clearly on behalf of the finder. The finder has the clear advantage halachically. But the loser, using that not pejoratively, but just technically, the loser is abjectly poor, and the finder is ridiculously rich. So then, those that came to Shulchan Aruch say, again, l'fnim b'shur sadin, to give it back. So that presumably means, because of Rachmanis and Staka, since those are Torah values too, so the totality of halacha is going to tell you to act a different way. This din looked at by itself is going to tell you one thing, but the whole value system of Torah, including all the other dinim, is going to tell you an opposite conclusion. So maybe that's what l'fnim b'shur sadin means. And we mentioned the other day the Shuvah of the Sri Deish and the Pasuk and Mishpatim, right? You call that about the Mashno, but that also shows that idea. So in general, in the Rishonim and in the Poskim, you find that these are probably two criteria used for deciding l'fnim b'shur sadin. One, that the din is more accurately reflected in the state, or that there is an element of Rachmanis or Tzedakah that's going to indicate going the other way. So did any of you get a chance to see that Gemara in Bava Metzia yesterday about Rabbi Bar Chanan? Right, so what happened there? So there in that story, Rabbi Bar Chanan had workers, and the workers broke his stuff. And so he wanted to charge them. And he said, you're mezikin. You have to pay for the damages. So they said, what are you talking about? We're poor. We're going to go home starving. We're going to have to sell our meager possessions to do this. So they went to Rav, and Rav passed him like that. And he said, really? Dina hafti? That's the din? That's what I have to do? So Rav said to him, what? Yes, for you it is. Why? Because the Pasuk says, the Monteleich v'derech tovin. The Pasuk in Mishle. And then, these guys pushed it further. Not only did they want to not pay, they wanted to get paid for the day's work. The Rav's like, come on already. You don't accomplish anything, but just break my stuff, I'm going to pay you too. So, they come back to Rav, and Rav again says, yeah, you got to pay them. So again, he says, do you know how to get to that? And the response is, yes, look at the next part of the Pasuk. Orchos Sadikim Tishmor. So, Derech Tovim, Orchos Sadikim, that means this is the way you're supposed to act. So, you could probably have two theories as to why the din is different for Rabbi Baruch Hanan. Why? Either because he was wealthy and they were poor, right?
Or
he's an Adam Chashuv. He's a person who is of high stature in a spiritual sense, and a Talmud Chacham, and somebody who we expect to live life in a more precise fashion, to live life in a way that's not just the letter of the law, but that he understands the values and should be sticking to them like he does in every other area of life, presumably. So these are two different angles here that both are relevant to l'fnim b'shur sadin. And it could be that this halacha itself tells us to be aware of more, or it could be that the Rachmanis component, as indicated by the Tzedakah component, as indicated by the Ashir Ani distinction, and these are probably both relevant to the b'shur process as well. Hi.
It just doesn't sound like it's really the name shares a bit, because it's really owed money and owed all these things, and then just saying, yeah, but form go it.
Okay, so you're saying that seems closer to the random kind of reversal of dinim that we talked about before?
Right, it's not just...
So that's important to explain, that it's definitely different. Right? That it's different in the sense that it comes from another area, it comes from the Rachmanis, and that based on the din itself, it seems like he should be totally correct. But what we're seeing here is that might also be a legitimate consideration. So what we tried to refute the other day was the idea that Lefdim Asher said din means just switching. So, oh, be a nice guy, you just, if you win, the other guy should win. So he wouldn't say randomly, if you win, the other guy should win. But if you're an Asher, and he is an Ani, so then, yes, Rachmanis might push in that direction. Now, you have to flesh that out a little bit more, because you can say, all right, so I have Mitzvah of Stacha, but let me give Ani Yircha, let me find another Ani to give. So part of the idea of Stacha is not just that he's poor and you're rich, but also whatever connection he has to this item. So some posts can actually say that when a person has an emotional attachment to something, let's say he loses an item, and let's say Al Pidin, you're not likely to return it, but the emotional attachment he has a din like an onion. Even if he's wealthy, but it's emotionally significant for him and not for you, so that also has the same kind of a concept. So, midin rachmanis, midin staka, that creates another level of obligation. So all of this could be relevant to understanding how Shara works. It's also interesting, just while we're on this topic, so there is a discussion in Poskim as well. The students from the business class will recognize this, that the question comes up, let's say you run a institution, a mosad, that's supported by public funds, that's supported by tzedakah. So do you have a right to go lefdim mishur sadin, let's say with your employees? Maybe you should say, listen, if I was down a rich guy paying employees, so then I have the right and maybe the obligation to go lefdim mishur sadin and pay them in such a way, give them benefits in such a way that reflects lefdim mishur sadin. But if I'm running a mosad that's supported by public funds and supported by donations, maybe I don't have the right to do that. I have to spend my money very carefully, and I'll pay what I'm mechuyev, I'll pay din. But what I'm doing with Nimishur Sadin, maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe it's not my right to do that. So that's an understandable instinct. But the Poskim would talk about this pretty much across the board. Say no, that even an institution should go with Nimishur Sadin. So how could you explain that? You could probably explain that also in line with the two different theories we just said just now. That the Odom Choshev idea, as Jacob was saying, that the idea that a person who is expected to live by a higher standard should act with Nimishur Sadeh. So you should say, well, for sure, institutions should act with Nimishur Sadeh. Right? They represent the standard. So it's one thing, any given individual, maybe he's not capable of living with Nimishur Sadeh. But the yeshiva, the shul, the institution, that for sure should be with Nimashir Sadin. Similarly, in terms of the Rachmanis components, and this may be particularly difficult for us to relate to in this institution specifically, but there is a concept of Ein Aniyus Spitzibur, that poverty doesn't affect the klal the same way it does the prat. That an individual who's impoverished, he goes home starving, he's really miserable. A institution, regardless of what you read in the papers, doesn't feel poverty in the same way. So whatever the institution is, one could argue, or at least under normal circumstances, that the institution vis-a-vis the individual is always going to be a usher compared to an ani.
So this is like against like institutions being people? You know, like,
well, corporations are people, right? Like Mitt Romney, the whole... So, yes and no. I mean, I think for some purposes, well, the truth is whether corporations are people, that has huge halachic nafkaminas.
Sure.
Coming up, especially, it's a Pesach topic, right? Because the question of corporations owning chametz. So the question of whether corporations are people or not has major ribbis nafkaminas, has major chametz nafkaminas, has all kinds of nafkaminas. So there is a strong halachic, wouldn't be a bad topic for sure 4 years ago when Mitt Romney was saying it. It would be a good topic to explore. But for this purpose, it's true that an institution is different than an individual, that however much an institution might be financially strapped, it's not really the same as an individual as far as poverty is concerned. So theoretically, you could understand also why an institution should go with the Mishra Sadin. Now, just also to fill out Tamir's point, your point to the story of Rabbi Bar Hanan doesn't seem like it's really obligatory even by the Mishra Sadin standards. So the truth is, Tosis in the second paragraph of Amitzia kind of asked that question. Not exactly, but you see the Tosis, I think it was on yesterday's list, the Tosis asks a different question, but is basically addressing that question. Because the Gemara tells us the source for Lifnim Mishur Sadin. What is the source for Lifnim Mishur Sadin? The Pasuk in Yisro, Samaisa Sher Yasun. Or we possibly have another source. What's that? Vasisa Hayashur V'Hatov. So either one of those are Psukim and Chumash. Right? Those would be great sources. But the story of Rabbi Baruch Bar Hanan is not using either of those Psukim. It's using two halves of the Pasuk in Mishlei. So that could be reflective of Tamir's point, if this is what you meant to say, that even the Lifnim Mishura Sadin as the Chiyuv that we find in these Psukim doesn't extend to that story. That story, we have to go further, we have to look to Divrei Kabbalah, and we have to look to Nach to find a marker for that. So Tosfos doesn't ask the question exactly that way, but it's essentially what you're getting at. And Tosfos there distinguishes. Tosfos says that the Gemara in the second paragraph, the Gemara there talks about returning lost property with the Mishura Sadin. So then it can invoke the din, the pasuk in Yisro. Because that kind of Lifnim Mishura Sadin, that's what the Torah is talking about. That there you have a scenario, it's talking about Hashavas Aveda. So Hashavas Aveda is basically a windfall, right? That you don't invest anything, and all of a sudden you find yourself with extra money. So maybe Al Pidin, the extra money you could keep, but Lifnim Mishura Sadin is proper to give it back to the person who originally had it. So we can formulate that as one level view that is more clear and is more explicit. But in the situation later on about Mitzia, so there he's not giving up on a windfall. He has to reach into his pocket and pay workers who didn't work. He has to accept the loss of broken property that's not being compensated. So that wouldn't be obligatory even under Lifnim Mishura Sadin, and that requires a higher standard that when the Pasuk says that it's an ideal that you should try to be a tzaddik, not just observant, but you should be a tzaddik. That's the kind of action a tzaddik would do, or a tov, from a tzaddik to derech tovim. That's what a tov and a tzaddik would do. Okay, while we've gone so far along this path of Lifnim Mishura Sadin, maybe I'll just mention one interesting vort that kind of highlights this. That it's interesting. So the drasha we just mentioned in Parshas Yisro. Or what's the pasuk again? The pasuk says that Yisro tells Moshe, teach the people that you should teach them Haderech Yalchuba v'yas ha-maisa asher ya'asun. So Maisa, says the Gemara, that's the din, and asher ya'asun, that's lifnim, Mishura Sadin. How do you see that in the pasuk? How did Chazal understand that? So I used to think that it means that Maisa is the abstract, and Asher Yasun is what actually happens. So that kind of works well with what we're saying here in terms of Pshara also. Right? That Yisro is saying, Moshe, tell the people the abstract in, and tell them what they should really do. So that would work well with what we just said about the Rav's whole interpretation about Rov, and about maybe what Pshara is. So I think that's a valid interpretation, but when I looked around in the Mefarshim on Chumash that devote themselves to explaining Torah Shebaal Peh, right? There's a whole genre of Mefarshim on Chumash that look to try to explain how did Chazal see the drushos that they saw in the Pesukim. So if you look in the Netziv and the Torah Tamima, so you'll see various explanations. The Tziv and the Torah Tamima happen to say opposite things. I forgot, in fact, which one says which. One of them says that a nun is something that diminishes the word. It means a little one. So masa, the din, is what you have to do all the time. And some of the time you need to go to the sheriff's din. So it's a minimizing kind of letter. While the other one says the opposite, that the nun is an extra letter, meaning you're going beyond. So that's what the Gemara is saying, that Chazal understood from there that you follow the din and you go above and beyond, that's the Fnim Mishur. So. But there's a particularly beautiful interpretation in the Sefer Haksava HaKabbalah. Haksava HaKabbalah writes that the significance of a nun, he says it's different. What a nun does is it transforms a verb into a adjective, or into a identity rather. So let's say, for example, if somebody learns, you would call him a low maid. But if somebody learns in such a way that it defines who he is, he's somebody who is identified as one who learns, what word would you use?
Lamdan.
It says so too. So maise, that's a verb, people should do the din. But somebody who is asher yasun, that's somebody who is identified as embodying the din. So how do you become such a person? The only way you can actually characterize the din is, and typify the din, is if you go with Fnim Meshur Sadin. Because the Fnim Meshur Sadin means following the values of the din and recognizing when the letter of the law hasn't fully gotten there. And therefore, the only way you can reach that madrega, by definition, is going with Nim Mishuris at the end. Very nice idea. And parenthetically, Yana Diyoma, I also remember seeing somewhere that the month of Nisan is meant to convey, despite being a Persian word, that the word Nisan is meant to convey that it's a month not just in which Nisan happened, but it's a month that is defined by Nisan, so it's Nisan. Okay, so in any event, so all of this could both explain the lumdus here, and again, I think hashkafically it's very important also. I think it ties in both to the concept and to the details of what we're seeing.
Is the question that last point?
About Nisan or about the...
No.
Yeah, so the point, this last interpretation of the nun, right, we basically saw four different ways to understand how the pasuk could mean din and lefimishur sedin. But this last one, the Tzava Kabbalah, is saying that nun means that you take a verb and you add a nun to it. It's not just something somebody does, but it's something that defines them, that identifies who they're about, what they're about. So a person who learns is a lomay, a person who's all about learning is a lamed. So a person who follows the Iker Hadin is doing the maisa. Somebody who understands the din so well that he is defined by it, he is a symbol of the din, is that Asher Yason, and the only way to do that is you're so in tune with the values that you follow the values even when they require you to do more than the letter of the law. We ask. Okay, so all of those contribute to understanding in a serious way what Shara could mean and could help us to understand why there should be this difference between Shara and Din. Now, parenthetically, I left off with a cliffhanger yesterday that we haven't addressed yet, so we should do it before it becomes a cliffhanger today. So I mentioned that the Rav threw in another shot while talking about, he had listed it as three shatim, so we've already had three, but this one is really a little bit different. He included it with this one, the one we just mentioned. But if you remember, the question the riddle I left you with yesterday was, how could you explain this din in a way that directly connects it to the sugya we had right before? Does anyone want to take a stab at that? So the sugya we had right before was about what? It was about a dayan who says, I don't know. Right? The indecisive dayan. And if you recall, we had to explain, why is the indecisive dayan worse than the disagreeable dayan? We have a disagreeable dayan. You could have two say one way, one say the other way, two wins. But if you have the indecisive dayan, then we're deadlocked and we have to add more dayanim. So if you recall, we mentioned the somewhat counterintuitive but clearly present explanation that bittul requires an absolute clash. And you can't have bishul when it's wishy-washy. So, two say chayiv, one says zakai, the people who say chayiv win. But two says chayiv, one says I don't know, you don't have a bittul there, right? We spoke about this last week. And we mentioned you find this also in bittul barov, that we don't apply it to a divergational matirin. And the Ran, the Nadarim explained it that way, that for bittul you need an absolute clash between heter and iser, and not heter and quasi-iser. So the Rav thought maybe you could say here as well a similar idea, that when you have a din, and so a din is going to mean, okay, so it's a fight between between Eli and Zach, so Alpi Din, one is Chayiv and one is not Chayiv. So, fine. So we have a clash between the two. So the two Dayanim who say Chayiv, the one Dayan who says Zakai, Bittul Barov. But the whole nature of Pshar is going to be much more subtle. You're not going to have a stark contrast between the parties. And if you have a disagreement, it's probably going to be in a more subtle fashion. I think it's a little bit his fault this way and a little bit the other guy's fault that way. And the other Dayan says, well, really, it's more the second guy's fault in this way, and the first guy's fault a little bit less so. And the third guy's going to say, well, I think it's really more 50-50. Right? So you're not going to have a stark contrast between the two, and that's what Bittul Barov requires, and that's missing in this case. So again, if that's the understanding, it directly connects from our previous sugya to here. Okay, so now, next few minutes, we'll continue this next week, but for the next few minutes, so let's talk about the issue of Kinyan, which is probably very significant. So, first of all, I only asked you to look at one Tosfos, but now let's look at some more Tosfos. So, for next week, I'll ask you to look at this big Tosfos on the bottom of the page, Tzricha Kinyan. That's going to be important. But for now, just one point which kind of illustrates the idea that we've been saying, that Pshara is not simply split it down the middle, but is an actual hora. So this is pretty much explicit in this Tosfos, Tiski Betray. And so the Gemara asks, Gemara in the last few lines of Vav Med Aleph, so the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, Shma Mina Pshara Eina Tzricha Kinyan. So it must be that Pshara does not need a Kenyan. If you're going to tell me it does need a Kenyan, so Lamanda Amar Tzricha Tzlasa, so according to the opinion that it also needs three Dayanim, so Lamali Tiski Betray, look at me again. Let's just have two, and let's also have a Kenyan, and that'll do it. So why do we care how many Dayanim? We could have fewer Dayanim, and the Kenyan will make it binding. The Hilchasa Pshara Tzricha Kinyan. And the din is that you need a Kinyan, which sounds like it means even if you have three. Right? Rashi over here explains the question. Tiski Betray, Vilikni Ned. So the Chayvin Ekonomenei, if you're going to have a Kinyan that's going to be binding, so Lama Li Bezdin. So what are you Bezdin for? So Lo Tehei Elam Matana Ba'alma. So then one side is willing to commit to the other side. So then we don't need the Bezdin to impose it on them. We'll be Daito. It's doing it willingly. And it's going to last. Elo lahachi b'inat fasa. So rather, apparently, we need three liyafos koach Bezdin to give the Bezdin more authority. Da'afal gav d'lo kanamine lo nahadru. That it's not going to be reversed even without a kinyan. So that was the kavmin here, that three is going to say, don't need a kinyan. And then the Gemara has the maskana that no, still, you need, even with three, you do need a king. So commenting on this statement from the Gemara is an important two-line Tosfos here. So we'll look at it together. Tiski Betray, we'll look at Minei. Says Tosfos, Afal Gav, the Mefarish Yerushalmi. This is very important in Yerushalmi. Time of the Reb Meir. Reb Meir's opinion that you need three. Why? Mishon Dipshara Nami Tzricha Hechra Das. This is an important line. Those two words are very significant. that you see, this pretty much says it explicitly, that Pshara is not the random roll the dice and split things. But what is Pshara? Pshara is Hecher Das. It is a panel of intelligent, learned people who are very serious and who are thinking about what should be, and that's how they're going to decide things.
Which Tosfos is this?
Tosfos Tiski. It's the third from the bottom of the page, a very short one. So Mikomako, Mitok Divere Meir, Mashmi Detrei Namish, Asub Sharik, which Regil and Shloshal Asas, Losub Lokluk. So it sounds like that even after the fact, if you're going to have two, according to Rebbe Meir, that it's not going to be anything. It sounds like that without this, the Bali Din would be able to reverse. So this line, Hecher Das, this is really the crucial phrase, which conveys this point that Shara is serious business. Okay, so with that, so we have this Din of Kenyan, and that seems to be the Maskani here that we need a Kenyan. Now there is a discussion in the Rishonim as to when does this Kenyan take place. So I mentioned I want you to look at this Tosfos, Tzricha Kenyan, for next time. It's long and important and affects other things, but one line that we'll just highlight right now quotes the Bahag. The Bahag is probably have different fonts, but it's about a third of the way down in Tosfos. There's a Mihu B'Halachas Gedolos, so that's the Bahag. Pirish Pilchas Dayab B'Halachas Dinin, the Tzarech Kenyan Al Mechila, Afal Pish Osana Kenyan Acher Hapshar. So the Kenyan is made at the end. Kenyan is made after the Pshar. If you look at the Hagos Ashri in the Rush, in Parak Aleph, Halacha Gimel, so you'll see that there's some debate as to what exactly we mean and when do we need a Kenyan in Pshara. So that you'll take a look at the next time. Because here the Hagos Ashri quotes the opinion, quotes from the Rashba, that you need Kenyan. Afilu always said, Baraval Bar Zaruah Pasak, the Beshlosha Ain Sarah Kenyan, the Chain Pasak Bahag. So this same Bahag that Tosfos just quoted. It's very common that the Bahag sometimes gets quoted in different ways by different Rishonim, meaning significant differences. So here, the Gosh Ashri quotes the Bahag that the idea of a Kenyan is only for less than three. So why do you need this Kenyan? What is this Kenyan meant to accomplish? Why should it be before? Why should it be after? What's the purpose of this Kenyan? Any thoughts? Why should we need a Kenyan more than we do by a regular Besdin? Marty?
Maybe by a regular Besdin, the beast, and it's going to be the one taking property from one person and giving it to the other.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not necessarily acting in a full-fledged Din role, that means that part of it's going to be left up to the Bali Din to be knocking out property from one to the other.
Are you talking about physically? It's interesting, we find that a little bit when we talked about Tos, right? We talked about that there's different levels of Tos, and we saw from the Gemara that in some scenarios, the Dayan is Nosin V'yad, and the Dayan may actually physically take the item from one person and give it to the other person. So what you're suggesting here is that maybe that could happen when there's Din, but when there's Pshara, that doesn't necessarily happen, so we need the Kenyan to make that happen. It's an interesting idea. Any other suggestions? What is Kenyan here for? David?
We said one of the, at one point we were arguing that since that it's they all have to agree with kind of, and they're sort of mutually agreeing to it, so we have to ensure that they just don't back out on it, really.
Okay, so then you're saying that maybe the Kenyan goes to their initial commitment, that since they didn't have to agree to this in the first place, so we need them to have a symbolic commitment. So the question is, should it be before the Din or after the Din?
Probably beforehand.
Probably beforehand, right? So it's interesting to hear that the Bahag is assuming it's afterwards. Any other suggestions as to what the Kenyan is there for? That's it?
Make sure that you can't revert the Din afterwards because it's like on the
Usually if you have a basis, then that you finalize it and then you know that it's legitimate. So over here, the way to legitimize it, to make sure that it actually sticks, is the kingdom.
But you do have a bez in here, so what's the difference?
Is this a regular bez then?
I mean, you're right, definitely not what Rashi just said, that you shouldn't reverse it. But what is there that's different than regular bez that requires you to say that? So that's something we have to figure out. So God willing, we'll start with this topic. So we're on schedule that we described before. We'll start with this topic on Monday. So take a look at this long Tosfos as some background for that. And again, tomorrow, major doubleheader for Tazria and Tachodesh. A lot to talk about. So be there and keep on inviting. All right, who wants to dive in for us? Ellie, it looks like you're getting ready for that.
Yeah,
okay. Ashrei Shavu Yisrael.